You just feel the excitement in the air. Excitement in the air.
I'm their new representative.
And you were there last term?
I've been there since 2000.
Oh, I thought.
I got a thumbs up from the TV people. Are we ready? Okay, so welcome everybody. This is the Thursday, January 17th, 2019 meeting for the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. And Andrea, a roll call if you're ready.
Here.
Member Talley.
Here.
Chairman Gehring.
Here.
Member Peterson. Member Barnidge?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
Here.
And Member Gibson?
Here.
Okay, great. Looks like we've got a quorum. Is there any public comment on anything that's not on the agenda? If so, please step forward, give us your name and what your issue is. I'm seeing none.
And Mr. Chair, I would like to point out that we will be moving an agenda item this evening. Item 5C has now been moved to item 5A. So we're just going to scoot the climate update and the Little Reservoir Response Plan down.
So
we'll go with Christy distributing the budget first under information items.
All right, so, okay. All right, we've got a couple of minutes to approve. We have the minutes for November 15th, 2018, the regular meeting. Does anybody have comments, adjustments, corrections? Not seeing anything, so looking for a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. I think we can do this by voice vote. Voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Are there any opposed? All right. And how about the minutes for November 29th, 2018?
Second. I'll move approval.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? So we're ready for the operations report.
Okay, I'll be giving the operations report from the information that I received this morning from our chief plant operator at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. The lake elevation to date is 480.08 feet. The storage is 19,730 acre feet. We are at 40% capacity. The rainfall to date is 10.9 inches, and that's since July 1st. And this is a 10.25 inches of increase in rainfall since we last met in November. Our plant production is 2.3 million gallons per day. State water is 0.736 million gallons per day, and our downstream release is 1.9 million gallons per day.
Okay. Any questions for Andrea on that?
I just have a quick question. Andrea, what was the first number? 480.08
feet.
And then, so I know that our last meeting it was 40%. So it hasn't come up.
It hasn't. And I double checked this morning because yeah. I wanted to be able to give you some new numbers. So although we've had that over 10 inches in rainfall, it seems like everything is still kind of evened out. Whether it's because of releases or evaporation.
Okay. Well, and when was, let's see, the last meeting was?
November 15th is when we last discussed the. Okay.
And it was 40% at November 15th. Well, at least it didn't go down.
That's true.
You know, if you look on slocountywater.org,
yep.
You can call up the reservoir. And I checked earlier today. And we actually have had a slight bump of about 500 acre feet. Mm-hmm. So it is thinking about coming up.
Okay. It's considering it.
Okay. Wrong button. There we go. I'm just wondering,
And you know, obviously I'm new to the board, and so this is probably an amateur question. But we had reservoir at almost 40%. We're at almost 40% now. Well, we are 40. Before the rain started, we were at 52%. I think I understand that because we use it over the course of those few months. But the question I was asked by a member of the public and couldn't answer is, why are we continuing to do downstream releases when the ground is already saturated and there should be water flowing?
I can answer part of that, Debbie. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for the downstream releases is in order to provide for habitat. We have a couple of endangered species in the creek that we have to keep wet. Another reason is that that downstream release satisfies the underflow that was cut off by the dam when the dam was built, because it has a clay core. Mm-hmm. So water doesn't flow through or underneath the dam anymore, and that cut off some water, and so the downstream release replaces some of that. And then the other reason is that the downstream release provides recharge for wells downstream, including agricultural wells, but also ultimately the municipal wells. So there are several good reasons for continuing that.
Even when it rains?
Even when it rains. Although we do have an interim downstream release plan that we implement that affects the way we control downstream releases when it is raining.
Okay,
so maybe Jill could add to that.
Jill Ogren, County Public Works, Utilities Division, and Jim more or less nailed all the reasons that we do those downstream releases. But oddly, we do actually continue releasing them even when it rains, because we have a compliance, we had a mitigation site, which is just downstream of the dam, and its watershed is so small that even when it's raining, there's not that much water goes by this one spot. So we continue to release water, and that's to help us stay within compliance on a mitigation site near the Rodriguez Bridge.
Thank you.
Next. Sorry, I'm just up here because I know what's next.
Okay. We have any other questions on that first item, which is 4A. So we're going to 4B then. And it looks like, Jill, you're going to handle that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So in your packet, you should have, or you would have been handed out, an updated Lopez reservoir storage projection chart. And the green line is where we're at today. Actuals, this was drawn up as of December 31st. So you're looking at what the reservoir looked like on December 31st. At the bottom, you can see down there, in the month of December, our predicted rainfall was 2.57 inches, but we actually only received 1.29. So we were a little behind the curve on that one. But if you look at the previous month in November, we were actually above what was predicted. So that's how those numbers work. And the orange line represents the projected storage if we got all the rainfall shown in the blue at the bottom. So some of the reason that we're below the line has to do with not getting enough rainfall. Some of it is we used a little bit more water than we historically had by the agencies. It's various little reasons, but as you noted that, you know, we've had some rain and we're still not seeing the results of it. So I also did some calculations this afternoon. Because I was kind of curious as well as what was happening to the reservoir. And so what I did is I looked back at this last storm, which started last Friday. And that was the 9th, I believe. And so we had, at the dam, we had 2.68 inches of rain since last Friday. So if you add up all the storms we've had this week, and that resulted, as of 3:45 today, about 380.6 acre feet increase. So not very much, but I can think I could safely say that the watershed is saturated now. So if we were to get more rain, I would expect to see levels in the reservoir rise. Let's see. Does anybody have any questions on the reservoir storage projection?
I have a real quick one. So based on, let's say we keep up, but we have a dry month, so this orange line is going to be in flux, right? And do you anticipate it staying as it is? Because I think we started out more of on a deficit, because then that's why we're seeing the not fill up as quickly as we'd like. So do you think that will remain as close to this, the projection?
So you're saying that if we don't get that 3.59 inches?
If
we're short every month, that green line is just going to keep getting farther and farther away from the orange.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but just say we have one dry month. Do you think that we're going to be at 20,000 acre feet and back into a low level release is basically what I'm asking before the summer hits?
Yeah, I couldn't predict that. We're already below at 19,000. It really depends on how much rain we get in February and March. It's possible, if we had some amazing rains that it could get substantially above the 20,000, but...
Yeah, I know.
We've been hovering, strangely, between 20 and 25,000 acre feet for several years now, and because we had gotten down as low as 11,000, so we did make a bit of a recovery, but still just kind of hovering here. So,
thank you.
Any other questions for Jill on that item?
I have another.
Debbie.
I have another follow-up question.
Yes. Okay. You can either pull it closer to you.
Okay.
Does that help?
That's how it works. Thank you. I was looking at December's going back to 2000 on the county website. And for the first few years after 2000, and I know we filled up in a year when we thought it was going to take several years. So Lopez, we had a really good rain year when we first built the dam. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that we had a lot more water coming in, flowing in the first, say, I don't know, probably 5 to 10 years. Two or three times more than we do now. And granted, we did have higher rain levels then, but not enough so that the proportion I would have thought would have been different. So I guess my question is, what's happening upstream that we're not getting the same inflows as we were getting in the earlier years?
That watershed has not changed much. There's very little development, but yeah, Jim could probably speak to this better than I can.
One of the things I've noticed, because I live up there, mm-hmm. is that when I moved out there in 1995, Rancho Arroyo Grande was all dry farming and hay production, cattle production. And today it's got quite a large number of vineyards. So whether that would have a significant impact, I don't know, but I do know that there's been that change. So, any other questions for Jill on that item?
Nope.
So, next we have the monthly operations reports, November and December. Yeah. And you're doing that also, Jill?
Yes.
Okay.
I will be up here most of the evening. Sorry. So, I'm just going to stand here.
Be here all week.
Yeah. So, in your packets, you have some charts that look like this, and these are your monthly operations charts. What they show on here is what the water deliveries are for each agency, and then a total. So in November, as a total, Zone 3 took 430 acre feet of water, and that includes state water. And that is down from October's. And as I would expect, that as it rains, people are using less water. So in December, it's even lower for a total of 373 acre feet. Probably what's interesting to note on these is that the agencies Pismo Beach and Oceano, or Pismo Beach started taking their surplus water, I believe it was either back in October and definitely in November. And by December, they've used up all their surplus water. And Oceano is now starting to use some of their surplus water. And let's see. So basically, Pismo Beach has used all their entitlement and their surplus as of the end of December, which means now they're taking state water through the next 3 months. So anything else interesting on here? Our state water that we are storing behind Lopez has still growing. Part of that is due to the fact that the water treatment plant uses about 60 acre feet a month just for blending purposes. And so even if all the contractors downstream are not requesting state water, we're still taking it for blending purposes at this point. Eventually we plan to catch up, or we will end up using some of that stored state water, maybe in a drought situation. We haven't really, it's a little bit undetermined how we're going to, what we're going to do with that water, but it is available to any of the state water contractors in Zone 3. I think that's all on here. The downstream releases, we've been tapering back because it's been raining. I work closely with some of the ag people, and we discuss, you know, we kind of gauge whether they are okay with us releasing. And then, as Jim noted, we have an interim downstream release plan, and that dictates how low we can go. And right now, the 1.9 is the minimum. We don't ever go below that. That's kind of our protocol. We go above, we increase that over time based on needs downstream. But so far we're on target this year, so that's all looking good.
You know, just a comment about the downstream releases. I think it's important for people to understand that it's not like a faucet. I mean, it's very, very difficult to, you know, to really regulate very precisely how much water is coming out, coupled with the fact that there's a very alluvial section of the creek just east of Biddle Park where if there's not enough water released, it tends to basically go underground, and that's a real problem for compliance. So consequently, often there has to be more water. You can see more water downstream than it seems like would make sense. But again, it's to maintain a live stream through that alluvial area.
Anybody have any questions on the monthly operations report? Okay.
I'm not seeing any questions.
Nope.
No? All right. Okay, thank you, Jill. And Andrea, are we doing distribute the budget now?
Yes, we're going to have Christy come up next.
Okay. This is 5C, Charlie.
Now 5A. okay, Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance. Tonight I'm going to distribute your fiscal year 2019-20 proposed budget already. Next week, the budget books will be mailed out to the Zone 3 Finance Committee, who will then distribute them to their city managers and other staff. And electronic versions will be sent to all of the advisory committee, TAC members, and all the alternates. So that'll happen next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just a quick overview of our annual review process. TAC has reviewed and finalized the non-routine O&M and the capital sections, and they'll receive their budget books at their next meeting, which is February 13th. On February 20th, I'm going to meet with the Zone 3 Finance Committee. And I encourage all of you to meet with your finance folks, discuss any issues you have with your budget before that meeting. And then at your next meeting, which is March 21st, I'll give a brief presentation of the budget and ask for your endorsement. After being endorsed by your committee, the budget will go to the County Board of Supervisors in mid-June for adoption. That's all I have. Any questions? Okay.
I'm not seeing any questions.
Nope. Okay. I'll see you in March then.
You want to give a thumbnail, I guess, in terms of this budget compared to last year?
This one did increase. There wasn't much going on that was noteworthy. At least I didn't think so. But the overall increase, it went up 3.1% for agency billings, which is where you guys try to keep it right around the 3% range. So it's there. And there wasn't anything of note other than I think we talked about Jill and I talked about the cloud seeding effort. That has actually been put into your budget for next year. So, all right.
Okay. Thank you, Christy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, so we're looking now at the low reservoir response plan, it looks like.
Now we're going to bounce back to the climate update.
Climate update. All right, sorry.
My slides here.
You're right.
Okay. So these snapshots were taken from the U.S. Drought Monitor. And for the month of January, the county is in a moderate drought to severe drought. So this is a little more severe than when we met in November. We had more of a combination of abnormally dry, moderate drought, and severe drought. Moving on to the temperature forecast, it looks like we have about a 33% chance of above temperatures for this time of the year. And when we met in November, it was more like maybe 40% above average temperatures. And then for the precipitation, I'd like to point out that this map was created on December 31st. And according to the January map, we are looking at about a 33% above average rainfall for the month of January. And now that we've had several storms in the past week, that seems about accurate. And from what we've been discussing within the office, this could be the total amount of rainfall that we'll receive for the month of January. Although there is a chance of a little rainfall on Sunday, but I don't think that's enough to really do much. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
I'm not seeing any questions. Okay. Thank you, Andrea.
You're welcome.
Now we are to low reservoir response plan, it looks like.
All right, so this is kind of, you kind of let in whoever had the question about the fact that we were hovering around 20,000 and what are we going to do about that? So in your packet today is a brief report, staff report, actually from the Technical Advisory Committee. I helped author it, but it was their idea. We met at TAC to kind of get our arms around what to do with the about the reservoir hovering around 20,000 per the low reservoir response plan, which was adopted in 2014. If the reservoir is below 20,000 acre feet and the Board of Supervisors has declared a local drought emergency, we would enter into this low reservoir response plan. The plan helps us manage the low levels in the reservoir. One of the things it does is it reduces the first stage between 20,000 acre feet and 15,000 acre feet. It reduces downstream releases by 10%. When the reservoir gets to 15,000 acre feet, it reduces all the municipal deliveries by 10%. And then there are more gradations below that. So since we've been hovering around 20,000 acre feet, and we've never really recovered from the last drought, the TAC suggested that we come up with maybe criteria for when we might go to the Board of Supervisors and request, you know, them to declare a local drought emergency so that we could officially go back into the low reservoir response plan and manage our releases and our water in the reservoir. So in discussing that with TAC, they came up with this language, which is in the report in bold, and they decided that if the storage level of the reservoir is below 20,000 acre feet, on June 1st, then we would move forward with requesting the Board of Supervisors to declare a local drought emergency. If the Board of Supervisors granted that request, we would then enter into the low reservoir response plan retroactive to the beginning of our water year. So I just want to bring that to your attention so that part of the decision behind that on the June 1st was that by June 1st, we're not going to get any more rainfall. That's typically we're entering into our dry area. So on June 1st, we should kind of know what the reservoir level is going to be like. So it kind of behooves us to like maybe progress in that direction if that's where we're at so that we can start managing our water more effectively. Does anybody have any questions about that? Yes.
I have one question, Joel. What, I know the TAC came up with this language because we keep, we're hovering, but what did we do, how did we go into that last time? How did the Board of Supervisors declare that? We obviously dropped, but how did that, because this is new language, and so we must not have hovered last time, or we, because I'm kind of trying to figure out the difference now.
So the last time, everybody was in the middle of a drought.
Yeah.
And so we developed this low reservoir response plan. It was adopted in December of 2014, mm-hmm. and then shortly thereafter, I think it was in April of that year, we got to... Or no, let's see, how did we... I think we entered in, we got below 20,000 that April. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was even farther. I think it might have been November of that following year we hit the 20,000. And then we decided to retroactively enter into the LRP. But we had, in the meantime, we had gone to the Board of Supervisors and requested the declaration of a drought emergency. At this stage, we already are below 20,000, mm-hmm. but... there really isn't, it's not clear that it's a drought. Mm-hmm. It would be, that's part of the issue, is that if we go to them and request them to declare a drought emergency, we need to have something to back it up with.
Mm-hmm. And last time when we declared it, it was which month did we, did they actually, because I can see why now we're waiting, because we're in the middle of the, quote, rainy season, we hope.
Right, exactly.
Last time, were we not in the middle of a rainy season? That's what I'm not remembering. So you think it was maybe April and we didn't get, because we probably didn't have hardly any rain at all.
We were already at least 2 years into the drought at that point.
Okay, that's
right. So we were well into that. And I think that's when we realized that what are we going to do when the reservoir gets down this low? Because
we were really, really prepared. We were, it was different because we hadn't had hardly any rain compared to
for years,
the last couple of years. Okay.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Okay. Thank you for that.
And I think the governor declared the drought emergency in April, the statewide drought emergency.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds
something
familiar.
Like that.
Okay.
I have a question. So you're saying June 1st as the date and then retroactive to April 1. What is the reason for the retroactive part?
It just takes, from a water accounting standpoint, April 1st is our beginning of the Lopez water year. So what would happen is if we retroactively go back to the April 1st, there's some other details in the low reservoir response plan which involve looking back and deciding how much of the previous year's surplus water was or was not used by each agency, and they get to carry that over. So from an accounting standpoint, we declare surplus water on April 1st. So I would be looking back to the previous year, how much did everybody use of their surplus? They would get some quantity of that water, and we would begin to carry that over for them to use. And so each agency actually ends up with their own separate stored water account once we enter into the LRP. And it just makes sense to do that retroactively to April 1st.
Thank you.
Not seeing any other questions. Okay. You're still up there, Jill mm-hmm. for the assessment?
Yeah. Let's see. So... we did get our draft spillway assessment back from GEI, and the report detailed the deficiencies of the spillway. of which there was nothing out of the ordinary or beyond what we already knew or expected. But in short, we have some spalled concrete on the spillway. We have, they call it drummy concrete. It means that it's kind of hollow underneath. We have some areas of that, some what they call protruding wall sections. We don't have enough cleanouts. Some of the under drains may be clogged, and we have some other minor issues. What will happen at this point, we're reviewing the report, and once staff reviews it and we're good with that, we will submit that to the Division of Safety of Dams, and then they will either ask us to revise the plan or make recommendations, or they could approve our plan, and that would help us, that will guide us to the next phase of the work, which would include what we call destructive testing, where they will actually go out and do core samples. That's where we might actually video. We're going to do some more in-depth assessing of the spillway condition. So that's where, that's like step two. Once we figure out what that looks like, step three would be to actually make repairs. But this is a part of our work plan that has to get first approved by the DSOD. So that's where we're at on our spillway assessment. Any questions?
I have one question. So they gave us the draft report. They told us we had some issues, which we probably already knew about, you said. Mm-hmm. And now staff is reviewing that. And then what are we going to give back to them?
Then we'll give back to Division of Safety of Dams this report that was done by GEI.
Oh, okay. So from the consultant.
Yeah, the consultant, yes.
Okay. And then will we provide some sort of any comments or that has to do, or we're just kind of handing that over?
Yeah, this is kind of the facts.
Okay.
This is the GEI has prepared a report of their findings from this, they call it like a desktop review. They actually went out there, but they didn't actually do any coring or any in-depth testing. They just did it by more visual observations.
Right.
And based on, they do a review of all the plans, because we did do some work on that, on the spillway back when we did the seismic retrofit. Mm-hmm. So they put all that together and they say, here's the deficiencies.
Okay.
And in that report is it recommends the next steps, which is like videoing the under drains, you know, doing some core samples. So all that will be sent to DSOD, and if they agree with it and they say, yes, that sounds like a good idea, we'll go forward with that.
Okay.
And funding for that work is included in next year's budget,
couple
of thousand, as I recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry. It's included in the budget. The work that might have to be done.
Correct.
And the destructive testing.
Okay, thank you.
The destructive, the next
phase.
The
repairs phase. Were that cheap.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's why I was like, what?
I like that idea. I hate to go backwards, but just, if I may.
Be my guest.
It wasn't, or was it? Did staff take it as a resounding endorsement to move forward on the LLRP? Is that what?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, because
we didn't vote.
I would like to.
I don't know if we need to vote, but
TAC would like to have the endorsement of Zone 3 on the plan that they came up with.
So moved.
Second.
I think we can do this by roll call. Let's do it by voice vote. All right, all in favor? Aye.
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 Are there any opposed? I think we're good.
Yay! Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. We're now to the bi-monthly update, unless we have any other questions on capital improvements.
Okay. Let's see. So, in your packet, you have a from David Spiegel. He is your primary engineer overseeing all the projects for Zone 3, and he provided this update. At the top, if nothing has changed since we saw you in November, we put a little no change on the outside of that item. So I'll just kind of skip those. But so I gave you the update on the spillway assessment. With respect to the Lopez Dam and Terminal Dam, we're calling it the hazard classification. What that was, that's a project that that came out of the whole Oroville incident. And DSOD required everyone that had a high hazard classified dam, which is Lopez and our terminal reservoir, to update all our inundation maps and then create emergency action plans. So we completed all our inundation maps, and we got the drafts back, or we had them completed. We sent them into DSOD. It took them a year, and they just gave us back their comments, and they were super minor. It was like a scale change. So we will address that, and then we'll submit them back. They'll presumably get approved by DSOT, and then we will take those approved maps, put them together with our emergency action plans, and send them on. The emergency action plans have already been drafted, so mostly at this point it's just finding staff time. We're targeting March, I believe, for all submittal of the whole package to DSOD. We did hear that because a lot of these requirements came down from legislative bills, that DSOD basically got inundated with inundation maps and work, and so they're behind on their review of things as well. So we're still on target for completing it as requested. The fault zone assessment and the dam left abutment issue. We took this back to TAC. We did get a report back from a consultant on kind of what they felt was the issue with this sort of a soil geologic kind of hazard. And TAC decided that before moving forward with some expensive repairs, that we would actually do a risk assessment. Like, what is the risk of this kind of a landslide area over the left abutment? What's the risk before we start moving forward with a very expensive fix, which was $1 million, I think is what it was. It was somewhere around there to do a full repair, so to speak. So that's where we're at with that. We'll keep you updated on that as we move forward on that. I believe the risk assessment is also in your budget for 19-20. Let's see. Other items. We are making progress on the domestic and fire tank repairs. You'll see in the budget, we've budgeted $100,000 to repair the domestic tank. And the fire tank at the water treatment plant is in a much more dilapidated condition, but we actually had a fire engineer come out to tell us exactly what's the quantity of water we actually are required to have. Those tanks have been there a long time prior to us having done the upgrade to the treatment plant, so we're hoping that maybe the numbers changed out there, and that will help us dictate, do we move forward with repairs to both tanks or just the one? So we should have more information on that probably by your next meeting in March, and we'll keep you apprised of that. We're also moving forward on the leach field. The Lopez leach field needed to be repaired, so we're moving right along with that. And we did, we've also completed a bypass pipeline condition assessment. A report on that will be going out to the TAC to kind of summarize what we found. But in general, we feel that the pipe is in pretty good condition. And I think that's it. Any questions on any of the stuff on that list?
Questions? Not seeing anything so far. No? Okay. Thank you, Jill. You're probably still up there, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Cloud seeding.
Okay. So, as you may recall, all of you except Debbie, who was here, wasn't here at the time, but in the end of November, I believe, we
we had a special meeting by the Zone 3 to discuss cloud seeding and get some direction from the committee. At that meeting, there was a unanimous vote to move forward with an cloud seeding program for this winter that would be air-based only. Since that time, at the Zone 3 TAC meeting in December, we discussed the approach to meeting with the Board of Supervisors to gain support, because the Public Works Director had met with some of the supervisors, and it didn't seem like they were all behind the concept of cloud seeding. So some of the TAC members met with the Public Works Director to kind of find out what exactly were their concerns and how might we, you know, talk to them, and so they can understand the importance to Zone 3 of initiating a cloud seeding program. So after our meeting with the director, I think three of the TAC members, maybe Brian too, are going to reach out to the supervisors in District 3 and 4. So that's Supervisor Hill and Supervisor Compton, to meet one-on-one with them. That will probably take place in March. Additionally, at our December meeting, TAC discussed the realistic timing for board action on the CEQA document and implementing the program, the AIR program. The earliest available time for a public hearing on the CEQA document was February, and with the required 30-day challenge period for the CEQA document, we realized the program would not be able to start until March, which would not provide enough benefit to cost. We would basically get maybe 1 month if there was a storm. So realizing that, TAC is now recommending getting the cloud seeding air program shelf ready for 2019. And so the timing for this implementation schedule would be to meet with the supervisors to gain their support in March, take the environmental document for approval in May. We have scheduled some time, May 21st, for that public hearing. If the environmental document is approved, we would then move ahead with a request for proposals or a sole source justification for a weather modification contractor. That's basically the consultant that would have the plane to help us do the cloud seeding, the air program. Once we got the contractor on board, we would have to take that contract to the Board of Supervisors for their approval, probably in July or August. And so with that timing, we should be ready to implement a full 5-month air program beginning in November. And at this point, we're still targeting $300,000 for this program, and that's what Christy mentioned has shown up in your budget book this year. So a little change in our plan, but I still think it's good timing, and I think the benefits to this schedule will help us have a greater understanding of the condition of or need of the reservoir. So we'll be able to either say, look, we never got the rain we thought we'd. We're still at 20,000 acre feet. It may provide more justification for cloud seeding. And it'll also allow us to develop an operations plan that would include considerations for suspending the program under certain conditions. So there's while some storms may come by and they may actually be able to be seeded, we may have other reasons that it doesn't make sense to have that particular storm seeded. So that's some of that criteria that we would develop over this next couple months. So that's the update I have for cloud seeding. Any questions?
You said $300,000, and that's already in the budget, the proposed budget?
Yes.
Thank you.
Questions?
I'm not seeing any other questions. Okay, so now we're going to move on to this easement request by Goodman. And it turns out that the company that I work for is involved in this project, so I have a potential conflict, and I need to step down. I think Brian is the next in command.
Actually, Member Barnett is.
Who?
Member Barnett. She's the vice chair.
Well, and I need to disclose that I do business with Carlos Castaneda as well. And so last time that this came forward, I recused myself as well.
So this is not from Castaneda?
Oh, it's not.
No.
Okay.
So I'll give you a little quickie update here. I don't think there's a reason that you have to leave the room, Jim, but you just can't vote on it.
Leave because I don't have any comments. So.
Okay.
All right. Jim. Bye, Jim.
Clever.
Yeah. All right. So I'll just give you a brief overview, and I believe that the applicant is here as well. Oh, great. So let's see. History here. The Castaneda, the Castanedas approached Zone 3 back in September 2016, requesting an easement across Zone 3 Flood Control District property to a landlocked parcel. If you have your packet with you, there's a vicinity map looking something like this, and you can see the parcels in question. So the Castanedas, there are two parcels there, two APNs. They came forward. They proposed an alignment for their access road, and that alignment used some road, I think it was a paper street or an actual easement called Chanterelle Lane, and then it required multiple property owners to also give permission, not just Zone 3, in order for that access alignment to work. So your committee heard that item in September of 2016, and basically the outcome was that you took no action. The board, the committee members at that time just took no action on the request. Since that time, the Castanedas are no longer interested, and they sold the property before even...
I missed that part.
Yeah. So they sold the property. They decided not to even go down the path of the land use planning and that whole process. So jettison forward. The Goodmans have purchased the property, and they are now coming before Zone 3 requesting an easement. And their alignment only requires them to have access over Zone 3. They've chosen a route that does not require them to have to ask any other property owners for an easement. Their alignment is in your packet as well. And it's my understanding that it meets, currently the way they have it shown here, is that it meets the requirements of like CAL FIRE and some of the road requirements that CAL FIRE and planning. but before the Goodmans can even move forward on the planning process, they have to receive a landowner consent agreement between the district and themselves. If Zone 3 recommends that we take this to the Board of Supervisors and enter into an agreement, a landowner consent agreement, then if that's approved by the Board of Supervisors, then the Goodmans could actually make a land use application and begin the process of going through whatever planning process there is. And it would involve eventually an environmental impact, some type of environmental document associated with the road. I can tell you that there are two parcels, and based on their size, each parcel could have two residences. It's my understanding the Goodmans are looking to build one residence at this time. And in your staff, the staff report, I included a chart like this. And the idea was to help you sort of understand the steps that are going to happen and where you might see this item come back to you for more review and more input. This is not the last time that you would see this project. You will we would be weighing in and looking for feedback during the planning and building phase. And ultimately, as part, if it were approved by the Planning Commission, it would come to us for an actual Zone 3 easement agreement. And, you know, it will have conditions on it of some sort, I imagine. TAC, I presented this to TAC in January, and their recommendation is to enter into this land use agreement with the Goodmans with the idea that when it comes back around through the land use planning process, that Zone 3 TAC would have the ability to, you know, re-review everything and provide input on possible conditions and to make sure that whatever's being proposed is not contrary to our operations or any risk to the water supply, which is what normally every year, I think it's every 5 years, we do a sanitary survey. And a sanitary survey looks at the whole watershed and identifies anything that could be a risk, like land graze, you know, grazing close to the water, or, you know, anything that might, they have to identify everything that's a risk to the water quality or the reservoir. So we would be making sure that whatever is proposed through this easement is in keeping with that, consistent.
Okay. Thank you for that, Jill. I just have a couple questions. I'll start it off. So I'm trying to understand where the driveway is going to go on the Zone 3 land. So if this is the driveway, where is the Zone 3 land? And okay. I tried to look at the other map, but I don't think isn't easier either.
It's, let's see. If you, in your map, mm-hmm. if you look at the top left corner of this document, you can see that there's a couple, they have, it says Lopez Drive, yes. and there's one there. And then if you look a little bit to the left, there's another entrance off of Lopez Drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that one of those options would be eventually picked, but right now they're showing that either one of those are options. All the squiggly line that you see through that whole parcel until it crosses that dashed black line, mm-hmm. that's all flood control property.
Okay, so from Lopez Drive all the way to the dashed line right
is,
here.
That's right.
That's all Zone 3 right there.
That's right.
Okay.
And so I believe, I sort of mapped it out. It looks like it's about 1.6 miles.
Okay.
Would be on flood control property.
Okay, and then where is Lopez Lake in relation to that driveway? And I was trying to look at this, and I wasn't really clear.
So, what was your question? Where's Lake?
Lopez in relation to how close is the driveway, the road?
So the yellow on this drawing here.
Yes.
Here's Lopez Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the parcel in question, this orange thing. And mm-hmm. that pointy area there, mm-hmm. that's about right where this comes on, I believe.
Okay.
Let's see. So you can put these two together. So this shape here is up here. Here's that little triangle
mm-hmm.
and here. So at the point of this triangle mm-hmm. here, that's, if you kind of drove a straight line, that would be about where that road would
okay.
touch.
Okay. And then is there a history or is there precedent for landlocked parcels in the county where we have granted easements in the past?
I'm not sure I have that information. So the last time that this was brought to your board, brought to your committee, Joshua Roberts mm-hmm. Had presented, and I'm trying to look here. It is my understanding, what we know so far is that this property has always been landlocked. Mm-hmm. There was never been any easement mm-hmm. To this particular parcel. Now, I don't know what the situation is throughout the watershed.
Right.
There, Jim actually had mentioned that some people, when they flooded all the land, you know, for the building of the dam, that some people who already had access were granted easements. So, but whether or not a landlocked parcel that has always been landlocked has been given an easement, I don't know.
Okay. Well, and we're going to look at this again eventually if it goes that far. Okay. Let me see.
Ask a quick question.
Yeah, I'm actually all done. Go ahead, Marcia.
Well, while you were looking, I was going to ask, why didn't they make a decision the last time it was, they decided to kind of sit on it? Is there any additional information there that may be pertinent to us?
I got the notes from that meeting. And
I was here, and Brian, were you here?
Yeah, I recused myself that time, too.
Okay, Brad?
I was here. I think I was chairing that meeting.
Right. I just felt like it was, I think we just sort of punted it to the Board of Supervisors because we were all sort of not feeling like we could make a decision. Do you remember, Brad, sort of what the point was?
It was a little bit of confusion about what they were asking the committee to do or recommend on. And I think by taking no action, essentially allowed the applicant to move forward in the process, which is what everybody felt comfortable with. And the same conditions applies where should the applicant have chosen to go forward, it would have come back again for another look by the advisory committee.
Actually, I remember the one big issue was the fact that there was very strident opposition among others that basically were going to have to grant easements where the road was going to cross.
That's right. It was more that they had to go get these other easements first before they could bring it back to this group, because you would still have to grant a landowner consent agreement. But they had other people they had to deal with first. So I think that's why we took no action, because we figured, well, if they can get these other people, then they'll come back to us, and then we would, have to take some action at that time.
I think they were here, too, and spoke. So there was some controversy. Yeah. I remember that,
That's and correct. I think it wasn't clear. We weren't clear on what they were proposing. They didn't say necessarily we are going to build a residence. I believe they were going to use it more for recreation, hunting. I'm not sure, but it didn't seem clear, I guess.
I do remember that they didn't really have a plan that maybe they said they weren't going to do much, but they just wanted that, and they didn't necessarily have a plan.
Yeah, they talked about using it for hiking and picnics. And I seem to recall that the majority of the committee thought that this was more of a land use issue rather than the Zone 3 Advisory Committee giving a recommendation on it.
Okay.
I guess I would just make the comment that, I mean, I don't have strong opposition to this. I am a little concerned about it feels like a precedent to me, because in all the years that I've been involved in Zone 3, the Castaneda thing was the first time I remember an easement issue like this coming before us. So, that was new. And I guess the thing that is a little concerning to me, and Kristen, I mean, you really kind of identified this, it's really hard to understand exactly where this is. I think we need better exhibits to see. It's just hard to follow on these maps.
That
would be my request.
I believe the engineer for the applicant is here. Do you have anything?
Let's...
Is there any way to get Google Earth up or something and show us in a larger format where this is? I mean, that would be helpful.
Can we, what we can do just sort of for the order? Can we just take questions and then we'll have you come up in just 1 second? So, Brad or Brian, that was your question. Okay, Brad, what about you?
I don't think I have any other specific questions. I think it is.
Of staff.
Yeah, of staff, with the note that as we sort of reflected back, the other elements from last time are not part of this where they're dealing just with the county or Zone 3 on this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that makes it a little simpler.
Debbie?
About the land use itself, and it looks as though it's not great soil, and it looks as though it's fairly hilly, but I'm wondering, is there potential for there being grapevines there? Is there potential for, it is zoned ag, is there potential for there being a large ag, a large water use? And I don't worry so much about having even four homes. The water use is negligible. A subdivision would worry me. But if we're talking about the potential for significant ag, and again, I support the right to farm and all the rest of it, but if it would appear that significant upstream ag is affecting water flow into the lake, then I would be concerned about that. So I'm just wondering, what's the potential there for ag development?
So all this will be ferreted out through the planning process. So tonight, if you were to approve going into a landowner consent agreement with the applicant, they simply get to go forward with going through the whole process. They will have to meet all the requirements, like the land use will be definitely identified that perhaps it's only two houses, and maybe it will also discuss, you know, what the potential is for ag. All these issues come out through the land use planning. It'll have to go to the Planning Commission. So that's another opportunity for a public hearing. It'll have to, and like I mentioned before, that Zone 3, we will still weigh in, and there's an environmental document that's going to identify impacts. So they'll have to have a clear project in order to do, in order to do an environmental document. It can't be vague. It's going to be a project. They're going to do an environmental document on X, building two homes. If they ever decide to do anything more, they would have to readdress that environmental impact. So tonight is really just like whether you're comfortable allowing them to go through the process or not.
So it's not approving the easement?
No.
Okay.
You are not approving the easement.
Okay.
It will come back to you again at the very end. If you look at the flow chart, it's like the very last thing on that, at the very bottom. So it'll go to the Planning Commission. If it's approved, then it can still be appealed to the Board of Supervisors. And if the appeal is denied, then the applicant applies for an easement agreement with Zone 3 and the county for an approved location and meets project conditions and mitigations. So this is really about whether you're okay with the person, with the applicant, going forward with the planning process. Mm-hmm. And they can't do that without our, without us agreeing to enter into a land use consent agreement or a landowner consent agreement.
Well, I'm a little bit more familiar because I ride my horse up near, not on that land, but very near. So I know some of the players in this. And I think if I'm thinking of the right parcel, there's been a lot of fighting amongst to get access to this for many years prior to this. And there's a group of homeowners that was basically blocking them. And so this seems to me the easiest way to get access without having, you could probably drop $250,000 into a lawyer to try and fight, you know, a few parties for access. So this seems to me to be the best way to get to the parcel. I'm not opposed to it. I'm really familiar with the land out there. And so I don't think it's going to cause any, if you're going to do the EIR and or some kind of study, seeing, I think that that should happen before we can even, so I support them going forward with this. I mean, that's my opinion. I haven't heard from the owner, but I don't see any, you know, unless an environmental report dictated that there'd be issues with that hurting the land. I'm not as opposed to this. I think this is more unique than you realize with the history of this. This is, there's not a lot of options there for them. So, I mean, not saying that that should be a weight, but it is, and it is something that I think about personally. And, you know, so I don't see any harm in letting it go forward with the studies just to see what impacts there are, and there's going to be other eyes on it, too. It's not like it's going to be our sole decision.
Shirley, you have any questions?
My questions have already been asked.
Okay. So now, if we want to maybe put the map up and then the applicant or the engineer could come up and just, if there's any questions of the board.
I don't know if we have a USB drive, but there's no internet connection in here. So unfortunately, we can't utilize Google Earth.
Okay. Oh, there is?
Oh, the city.
So Debbie says that there is internet access. There's Wi-Fi. Andrea, maybe it's not popping up or something.
I'm going to step aside and let the experts
let them find it.
If I may.
Yes, Brad. Yes.
I won't tell jokes, but Jill, has there been, you know, this idea of a consent of landowner agreement? Mm-hmm. Has Zone 3 in your tenure and Andrea too ever done one of these before?
No.
That was my sense too, was that was sort of a first, and I think again with the extra, and it sounds like it's still there, the opposition of the other landowners to allow access across their property.
Right, so that was the Castaneda's issue for the route that they were proposing. So
yeah.
This is just a different route. I apologize, I should have included another map. I was looking at where the Castaneda's had and theirs is like actually around the bend and around the corner. Mm-hmm. They're totally different locations, and so, because I think they were trying to utilize this partially. There's already an access easement, this Chanterelle Lane. So they were trying to take advantage of that.
Okay.
Now, this is before you get to Chanterelle Lane. So if you know where that is, it's this poses before you get to there.
Okay.
So it's,
Do you know how many properties are around?
In your packet, if you look at that picture, you can kind of see the outlines. Let's see. All the little red lines on this map here, those are all parcels.
Oh, okay.
So you can see, the flood control district has the property to the, how would I say this, to the large parcel over here. I believe this is flood control district. This is all flood control district property here. And then all the other property owners are over here. Mm-hmm. So you have the district on one side of the parcel and private property owners on the other side.
Okay.
Just about got it.
Okay.
I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Obviously, my concerns are watershed and water use and how it affects downstream Lopez Lake. But I'm wondering if we even have the authority to make a decision based on that, or can we only make a decision based on the tiny little area that's affected? It's a legal question.
I'm just thinking the environmental document is going to be looking. It can't look at it as it has to look at the bigger picture. You can't, you know, that's one of the rules of CEQA. You can't just like take this little project and this little project and look at them separately. You have to look at them as a whole.
Okay.
Like the cumulative impact.
Right. Okay.
So they will be looking, that's my understanding at least.
Thank you.
It's like driving, right?
There
you go.
Yeah.
There we go.
See if anybody's home. See if
that's right. Man. We're out by the pool.
Yeah. I think you're getting close.
Right. I think this is the general of the second day. Debbie, this is it right here, right, Debbie? If you want, I can grab my notes and speak from here or answer questions
sure,
from there.
Sure, maybe come to the podium. Maybe come to the podium, please.
Greetings. So I'm Ron Riley with Gehring Taylor & Associates. And as requested, we've pulled up the approximate area for the what you're looking at are two potential driveway locations. I'm going to take a step back before we really look at the map and just, in the broad sense, this is a very preliminary step of a long process. And conceptually, we're looking at a property that the county owns. And the idea of would we be open to allowing someone developing a residence and a landlocked parcel to potentially go through the process of procuring an easement. So that on our end started with a lot of due diligence, studying how it could actually occur. And, of course, everything starts with the Castaneda application. And going through Chantrell Lane, and there are a lot of roadblocks there because you have to obtain easements through several other landowners. And a tremendous resource in our office obviously, Mr. Gehring. So when Lopez Dam was first built, I believe that the spirit of owning all of this land around it, some of the sentiment behind it was, by building this dam, we're creating landlocked parcels. And in the future, since we don't know how they're going to access them, that's the idea, is we retain them so that we can potentially grant them the access when they come to us with a project. And that's what, you know, eventually there will be a full project that will be presented. So that's the concept. So what you're looking at are... you know, how would I best describe this? I guess I could point to the two locations right now and come back, but...
Do we have a pointer, Andrea? Probably not. Okay. Maybe there's one here. Yeah.
Okay. Essentially, one here, one here. And so the reason that you're looking at two potential driveways is that, you know, we are going to have to go through... county's planning and engineering processes, and the speed of traffic coming through, the site distance from making a turn in and out of a driveway there. These are two feasible locations that we're looking at. And then you can kind of see it's difficult. You know, you would think, well, why don't you just take the driveway and then just go straight up to where our property ends, or straight up to where the Goodman property begins. And that's really the reason that this, albeit somewhat confusing, snake-looking map is provided, that to meet county Caltrans basic roadway design criteria. You have to stay under certain percentages of slope, and this was actually part of the due diligence study was, can we actually make a road that goes through this parcel and up to the Goodman parcel that meets the standards of the county and CAL FIRE, et cetera. So we have two options for entry, and we do have a pathway that's feasible to the Goodman property. And when I'm looking at it here, it looks like we're, you know, proposing, it looks like about 0.8 miles of potential roadway before you hit the Goodman property. So,
so he gave you a pointer.
Oh, very good.
Oh, right there.
Didn't see that. Okay, so does the pointer work on this? Yeah, it reflects. Mouse cursor from here. Okay. I didn't realize I was going to need a technology lesson this evening.
The one on the computer.
I got you. What you're saying?
Oh, like this? Yeah. As long as you're on the mic, it's fine. As long as you're on one mic or the other, okay. Just we have to have you on a mic so they can hear you at home, whoever is watching, if anyone is watching.
We certainly hope whoever's listening can hear me, I'm thinking. I know. So. Okay, so this would be one approximate area of entry, and what you're looking for are areas where the terrain isn't, you're not going straight up a hill, right? So this would be a secondary area. And what the trails do are you have to meander in such a fashion that you're not creating too much cut or too much fill, and you're not going straight up a hill, like I said. And it's basically, if you're into hiking and things, it's the switchback up the mountain. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And there's a lot of climb here. And so I think in that, you know, when I said 0.8 of miles of roadway, you've done so much snaking and back and forth that, you know, I mean, really you're talking about maybe a quarter, maybe a third of a mile from Lopez Drive to the Goodman property, you know, in general.
Okay, thank you. That at least now I kind of understand where it is. I couldn't tell, so thank you for that, Debbie. Yeah.
Can you just mark for us on that map where the parcel sits then? Just rough boundaries. We don't need a full survey.
No, I will try.
Kind of how it sits there.
Sure. So, right, so there are two peaks, right? Okay. So I believe, and Debbie, if this looks different to you, but the triangle more or less begins here, runs to the east, you know, quite a ways, but had I known I was going to need a map tonight. Okay. Oh. And my own computer. Right. So the answer is I'm going to struggle to show you that, Debbie.
I think I have some idea now from what you said about the triangle.
All right. Very
good. I can look it up myself.
Okay. And you know, there will be other presentations. And, you know, the next time we're before any board, I think I'll bring some exhibits that are a little bit easier for
it's a good dry run.
Understand, right? Yeah, very dry run. I live down the street. Oh, hey, my client's things on the agenda tonight. Maybe I should show up. Oh, good. I got to ask a lot of questions.
Anyway. Okay. Any questions of the the applicant or the applicant's representative, Brad?
Just to I think reiterate what you said is through your due diligence process. Right. You're at least convinced that there is a path to keep it at less than or 16% or less.
Correct.
Cutting and fill. I mean, you can get to Oz from there.
That's right.
A bit of a serendipitous route, but you're convinced it's worth your client's effort, obviously, to keep moving ahead.
Yes, I do.
To stay within the existing county ordinances, regulations, et cetera.
Right. And, you know, the pathway that we show may not be the only path, but, you know, out of, I would say, 8 to 10 pathways that we tried out, you're looking at the only alignment that really seems to fall within the parameters that the county and CAL FIRE would accept. So this by no means is a final product, but you will, the next time around, see actual engineered design, you know, documents. This, you will have before you the alignment for which you will be approving an easement if you so move.
Okay. Ryan, questions?
Nope.
Okay, Debbie, any more questions?
I'm going to give you a shot at this one.
Oh,
because if I were doing this, there's nobody I would choose to use better than you guys.
Right.
So I think if anyone can make this work, you can, and I trust you on that.
Appreciate it.
However, so I'm giving you a shot at this one. I normally wouldn't, but I'm going to. From what I read in the report, historically, it was always landlocked. So this isn't a situation where they created the lake, they knew things would be landlocked, and so, you know, maybe they should help out. It, from what I read, that argument doesn't really hold water. You want to rebut that?
I don't, without searching the title of that property and the adjacent property, which, I mean, we have, I just don't have before me. My discussion internally with Mr. Gehring has always been that the county-owned areas around the property, the intent behind those was that they knew that they were landlocking some of the other parcels that could potentially be lived in. And there's no way to know where to grant an easement. You can't grant it. I mean, you could grant an easement across the whole property, I suppose. But it would be better to come before the committees and present an alignment and a design and give the opportunity at that time. So,
I was relying on the staff report there.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. And I don't want to conflict with it. I'm just presenting my own understanding.
Thank you. Yeah.
Marcia, any more questions?
No.
Okay, Shirley?
Yes, one more. So if you had cooperative neighbors, would you wouldn't be coming to us? Is that kind of the situation?
I believe if there were cooperative neighbors that probably, you know, you hate to conjecture, but
yeah.
Probably they never would have sold the property, mm-hmm. Right? But I believe when you look at the challenges of reaching the Goodman property in the area where they want to build the home, that this is actually the best route. It's the best route to pursue either way.
Okay. Yeah, and I am familiar with some of the landlocked properties because that happened to our family. So are we on to discussion?
Why don't we go? Let's go to comments. Shirley, you can start.
So I'm going to go ahead and go along with this, and as long as we have a follow-up chance to go over all the information, then I would support it.
Okay, thank you. Marcia?
I've commented. I support going, letting the EIR ferret out any issues.
Okay, thank you. Debbie?
I can't vote tonight, and I don't have any other comment at this point.
Okay, thank you. Brian?
I will support it, but next time it comes back, I hope we have a better presentation.
Fair enough.
Brad?
Yeah, I have no opposition with moving forward.
Okay. And I would echo the comments that have been made. I think that we're not approving the easement, but we're saying go ahead, let's see what else comes up when you do all the other investigations and reports and EIR, et cetera. So this is kind of the first step, so I would go along with that. And so do we need a formal motion? Okay, so I'd look to the board for a motion.
See, I guess I move to go forward with the Goodman easement request, go through the process. Is that
there's a certain wording? It's the land use landowners agreement, consent of landowners agreement. Is that right?
Zone 3 is recommending that we take a consent of landowner agreement to the Board of Supervisors for approval.
Yeah. Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? No. Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And any abstentions? I guess that would be Debbie. Yeah. And Jim. Okay, thank you for that. Good luck. All righty. So let's see, now we are back to future agenda items, and so we have three there. Andrea, are there any comments? Comments, or those are just kind of in a holding pattern?
Jill might have some information about the contract changes.
Okay.
I think that's in a holding pattern.
Okay.
And the cloud seeding is going to be ongoing for some time, as well as the LRRP, depending on the drought situation.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we're working on scheduling an initial meeting with the TAC members for the contract changes, and that's not looking like until end of February. So may or may not have anything to report, but it'll be an ongoing item for certain over the next year.
All right. Thank you, Jill. Any committee member comments?
I had a comment and question. Twice in the last couple of weeks, I've attended county committee meetings, and when I've Googled the county and tried to find agendas, I can't. And I'm understanding that there's some kind of issue with Google ID or something, and I'm not technically savvy enough to get it. But I wondered if that's something that's going to be addressed and corrected so that if I can't find it, I expect.
I haven't heard about Google ID. The county recently underwent a countywide website upgrade. So there is some information from our older website that's been archived that was accessible for about a year and I think should still be accessible. Now, I know you and I corresponded today. Mm-hmm. And as far as this agenda goes, it's placed on a third-party website. That's not the county's website. It's slocountywater.org. Mm-hmm. And that website, we are still updating it, but the information from that website is slowly being transferred over to the new countywide website. So there are some pieces of information missing, and I apologize for that, but eventually that website will be obsolete. There is legislation coming down the line that all public meeting agendas need to be posted on a public agency's homepage. So eventually the Zone 3 agendas will be posted on the new counties.
So for right now, members of the public can go to countywater.org, and that's where they'll find the...
Yes, slocountywater.org.
Slocountywater.org. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So, and where, if they're watching on broadcast, they'll know where to see it, but where can you see the meeting then? Is that on slowspan.org?
It's on slowspan, however, it's not televised live. It's recorded.
Okay.
So in about 3 to 5 business days, this meeting will be uploaded to slowspan. You go to the Slow County link and then drill down to Slow Flood Control District, and then you can find the meetings by date.
Thank you.
And they are televised, but it doesn't seem to be a set schedule. Sometimes I stop on the public access station, so it's televised on county government at odd hours.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anyone else? Comments? Shirley? Marcia? Brad? Ryan? Okay, with that, I would move for adjournment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right. Meeting adjourned.
Just died.